Welcome. We're going to get started. Thank you all for being here. Today is Tuesday, November 19th, 2024, and this is the City of South Jordan City Council Strategic Planning Study Meeting. Say that real fast. We've got a lot to talk about tonight, and we appreciate each of you for being here. We welcome everyone who's here, whether you're joining us in person, presenting as a guest, as a visitor, or joining us online, or might watch this later. Thank you for being part of our meeting tonight. My name is Dawn Ramsey. I have the privilege of serving as mayor of the City of South Jordan with this outstanding city council seated up here next to me. Thank you all for your service. And to our staff, our administrative staff, thank you. We appreciate each of you. We're going to open the meeting tonight with an invocation by Councilmember Kathy Johnson.
Our Heavenly Father, we're indeed grateful to gather here and to discuss the issues of the city and to have thy guidance and spirit to be with us, to help us to know those things which are in the best interest of our community. We're so grateful for thy help and for the safety that thou hast provided to many members of our staff and to our community. We ask thee to bless us that we may do wise decisions and wise planning that will benefit future generations, that our community will be able to develop and be a strong community that will be able to withstand the troubles of time and that may come forth. We ask thee to be with us now. In the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you, Mrs. Johnson. Okay, item C on our agenda, we have coordination. Anybody have anything you would like to bring up? Anything we all need to know? No? We will move forward. A discussion of our regular council meeting. Now, I have a question on just the fine print. Our regular council meeting agenda was amended. Was this work meeting agenda officially amended, or do we need to make that change reflect here as well? I think we need to amend the agenda to reflect the change in the regular meeting.
I think you can just note it.
That was
that's just intended to be a list of the items that would be discussed.
Right.
You can just note that it's been...
Okay.
Well,
okay.
We could discuss the fact that it's been pushed back.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So our regular council meeting agenda, we've got a couple of presentation items. Our Lung Cancer Awareness Month proclamation, which is something that we are proud to do every year. And our Small Business Saturday proclamation, which we're also proud to do every year. So we've got that in our regular meeting. By way of note, we used to have, but do not have any longer, and yesterday a formal amendment was made and published, removing the altitude development land use items from tonight's agenda. So that is not something that will be discussed in the next meeting. So we'll cross that off right now. And then we've got public hearings. We've got a public hearing on updating our outdoor landscaping standards, prohibiting lawn outside of active recreation areas, so not including all of the active recreation areas, in commercial, industrial, and multifamily developments. Pretty much it's just the extra turf, the turf that you don't walk on unless you mow it, right?
It's the little pieces people always ask, why did they put that there? It wastes water. It
yeah.
serves no purpose.
Not places where employees are going to gather and have lunch, and not places that are active use, but places that literally don't exist for use, unless it's just to mow them, right?
What's the determining factor? I mean,
in this,
yeah,
for a commercial property, that they'll submit a plan as part of their development. It'll show landscaping, and our planning staff will review it and
yeah.
see. And you know, we'll probably, if they say this is going to be used for employees, then we take them at their word. If it's a very narrow, well, like for their employees, an active space for employees, or serve some function of the business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A point of clarification, when I was reading through, it said something about an 8-foot wide space. Like if it's not 8 feet wide or more,
yes,
then what we're saying is no more grass.
Correct.
So I'm thinking of all the townhomes in Daybreak. They've got little yard spaces in front of their townhomes with maybe a little fence.
So
if that doesn't go 8 feet wide, we're no longer allowing them to have grass.
So this is commercial. Yeah.
Yes.
Director.
It says
this
more high.
Yeah, there are some exceptions. Director Schaefermeyer can address.
Can you just help me understand that?
Yeah, so none of those standards are changing. It's just for commercial.
is as long, unless it's within an active recreation area, which is defined by the code, it's not allowed. In daybreak, and this was a conversation that we had way back when we adopted these standards, we had it with Jordan Valley. We said, we already have a lot of small lots that are conserving water. Can they not have some grass, even if it doesn't meet the same standards that you would want to see on a bigger lot? And so they've carved out that exception in the code.
Okay.
For lots, but again, that's not being touched by this.
Okay, I didn't understand that, because it says multifamily.
Right.
Well, that's
so
just like the title
daybreak,
of the code, isn't it?
Multifamily does not include townhomes. Those are considered in daybreak as single family.
So multifamily, are you referencing like
so
apartments?
Outside of daybreak, a multifamily project, we would probably require them to have that active recreation.
So Daybreak operates independent of this because they already have high standards for water conservation.
No, this applies to Daybreak,
okay.
But in a different way. So outside of Daybreak, you have the way that townhomes are developed is just a little bit different.
Outside of Daybreak.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Yeah.
So this applies to them.
Yes, this applies to them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm visioning dozens and dozens of townhomes in Daybreak that have a small parcel of grass. That's
uh-huh.
still going to be the case that they can have that.
I mean, I'd have to take a look at, so when we adopted this, Daybreak changed their standards. So I don't know if we're looking at new townhomes or old townhomes,
okay.
But they can have an area of grass.
Okay. And
that
I'm
is
sorry,
smaller
just...
than outside of the street.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Schaefer.
But
no
everyone
problem.
Who's existing can keep the grass they have.
Right, right.
So
do
would that also affect townhome
yes,
properties?
Yeah. That's a good clarification, too, because those of us who attended LPC yesterday know that we had to answer an opinion question, just a general survey of some things being floated for the legislative session about how would we feel about having the state determine that over the course of time, everything might have to be retro fitted. For things like that and long term. So that was a good clarification that at this point it doesn't change anything that already exists.
So in the ordinance as it's existing, and this isn't changing it, it calls out specifically small residential lots and how this standard is different than that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep.
Okay, no, yeah, you're welcome. These are the kind of questions we want to ask. We want to make sure we understand that. That's going to be a public hearing item that the public will get to weigh in on. Give us your feedback and let us know how you feel about that. But really, it's not eliminating any functional turf. It's just an effort to conserve water by eliminating non-functional turf that, you know, several years ago used to be required. And now that's probably not a good idea, right? So anyway, that's what we'll be talking about. And then we have our... That's it. That's the end of what's on the agenda. Wow. Okay. Anybody have any other questions about those agenda items for later? Okay. All right. If not, then moving on to our item E, our discussion item. We have E1, strategic priorities, revised strategic goals and objectives, and future action items for the fiscal year 25-26. This is a big deal. We're already talking about our strategic priorities and initial budget conversations, and the staff's working really hard on all of these things to prepare us. And one thing I'm grateful for is that we are always ahead of the game. We have these conversations sooner than a lot of folks do, and it's been very valuable, at least during the time that I've had the chance to be here for part of this. So we're going to turn it over to our city manager, Mr. Lewis. Take it away.
Well, thank you. And I'm hoping tonight that we can have some fun discussion. In the previous years, we've actually held this meeting on an off week of our regular council meetings. But this year, I felt like we could probably kick our budget off in work session this year. I've talked with most of you, and as we've kind of looked at our strategic priorities, you've all indicated we don't need to make any changes to our vision, our mission statement, or our priorities. They're still the ones that we've been working from for the last couple of years. So I didn't want to spend any time re-going through that like we've done traditionally in this meeting, which I figured would save us about an hour of time. So with that, I just wanted to kind of get into our budget for the next fiscal year and start talking through some things with you of where we're at on different things. The staff has started to put the budget together already. Our department directors have already all submitted staffing requests. The team in HR and myself now will be going through those over the next few weeks. And we'll have those prepared for you when we meet in our January, our traditional budget meeting in January to walk through those. The team that's been looking at all of the capital improvement projects have been working to update the five-year CIP plan to make sure that we have the correct numbers. And we'll be bringing those to you when we do our February meeting, as we have traditionally done. We intend to put a budget together that is balanced, as always, based on the funding that we have available, which means that our team is working hard to find efficiencies in every area of our operations. So they have been reviewing many of the programs that we've been doing over the course of the year, as well as any proposed new budgets, new programs for the budget, and we'll talk about one of those tonight. So, you know, with that, we don't anticipate a lot of new revenues coming to the city. By that, I mean, we're not going to raise taxes to do things. But there are a few things that I wanted to talk about with you tonight because I want your input to see if there are things that we should consider that could affect our revenues and our expenses. So as we jump into that, feel free to have discussion. We'll make good notes and we'll go through that. So one of the first things that I wanted to talk about tonight are some possible revenue increases to the city. One of the things that we have talked about with the staff is whether or not we should close out some of our redevelopment areas, our RDAs. We have some that are on the books that have reached an age of maturity where they could be closed out. In doing so, that would put them onto the tax record, and we would see an increase in the revenue from those areas. Now, there are some pros and cons to doing that. Once you close them out, they're very hard to reestablish, and there are times when it might make sense to keep them open so that we can continue to foster the commercial and economic growth in those areas. So I had Sunil and Brian take a look at that. Brian, remind me, how many total RDA areas do we have?
Total, we have 15.
So there's 15 total areas. Some of those are relatively young and quite active. Of those 15, there are 2, 4, 6, 7 that could be closed out. And I'll just mention those to you, and then if you have some specific questions, we can talk through that. One of those is area number 2, which is the Landings. That's Harmon's.
Then the Harmon's on Redwood?
That's, which Harmon's is that, Brian? It's this one right here. So it's this area that we're currently in. So that one's been around 20 plus years, I believe. The area number 3 called Southgate. Area number 4 called the South Gateway. That's the area up around Ultra Dent. The South Jordan Parkway RDA, the North Jordan Gateway RDA, South Jordan Town Center, which is the City Hall project right here, and area number 10, the District. If we were to close all of those out, we anticipate that we would see revenues around $800,000. As those are added to the
every year
to the tax rolls, that would be going forward. Now, some of those areas are areas that are in the process of going through some redevelopment, and it might be helpful to leave the RDAs open. So, for example, at the District, which we know is undergoing some changes as they work to attract some new businesses and do some things to replace businesses that have left. So, you know, for example, the Gordman's building has been vacant for a while, and as they're working to do some things, it may be helpful to leave this tool in the toolbox in case they need to do something to help attract businesses there. So those are kind of some of the areas, but I'd like to know what some of your thoughts are, because not only are you the council, but you're also the RDA board. And so that would be a decision for that.
So if we close the one in the District, Is there a possibility of opening up a new RDA for a new project?
You have to start from the very beginning.
You'd start, yeah, and that's where having it open is beneficial. If we close it and then we had to start it open, we'd have to go back to all of the taxing entities and get them to do that. And you know what that's been like over the course of the last 5 to 10 years in creating new RDAs. And so they're very difficult to create. You can probably remember we worked with Merit Medical a couple of years ago to make some changes to their RDA to keep that going rather than forming a new one.
And that was a heavy lift.
So even saying that, I mean, because they've run their term to create new agreements and stuff, we would still have to do a lot of that work. Right? There's just a part of the step that we didn't have.
Yeah, there's still work that would go into it.
There's still some limitations on what we can use the money for because of HB 151 and some of that.
Would that be a conversation that we should have with the new developers or the people who own the property?
That's a good question. Brian, why don't you step up to the table for this part as the RDA guy? The question was, is this a discussion that we should include any of
the players
that help or that are part of these?
I hadn't really thought of that. My guess is most of them would say close them.
Because, really?
Well, when you say players, you're talking about the taxing entities or you're talking about
the landowners?
No, the
landowners. Oh, the landowners. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant the taxing entities. We could. It wouldn't hurt to, you know, see what they want to do. Like I said, we would have to have like a new budget, a new plan, we'd have to readopt a lot of those to extend these.
I'm sure the other taxing entities would like
it. I think they would prefer
increases to them.
Because once we close it out, their tax revenue will also go up.
If you were to guess, Brian, if you were to guess about these seven, what do you think responses would be from these?
I would think that the only one that would probably would maybe be the district.
Mm-hmm.
And I, quite honestly, from our standpoint, I think that's the only one I would really recommend that we leave open.
That would have been my guess. That's what I thought you were going to say. Yeah.
We have a possible project there too. So.
Yeah. And the rest, you know, the rest of them are, there's, you know, most of these have not had such a single beneficiary as the district has. Mostly it's been for infrastructure. Even the district was for infrastructure, but it was because the district was built by one group. This one may be a second to that, the two that are in our immediate vicinity. But most of them were to pay off bonds. We bonded for, you know, streets, water lines, all that kind of stuff. And so a lot of that money was used to just pay off bonds. And those bonds are now paid off. So you'd have to figure out what is it we want to accomplish. And I don't know, other than the district, if there's anything we could really accomplish at this point. I mean, we probably have some other areas, like if you look at the Smith's area and some of that may be ripe someday for some type of a new project area, but they're not in an existing one. And with, like I say, with the HB 151 requirements,
it makes it hard.
I mean, heaven forbid, if we wanted to tear them down and put apartments in, we could probably use money for that. But if we wanted to do retail type incentives, those are really difficult to do these days.
What's happening with that revenue now that's flowing into the RDA?
It's not.
It's no longer anymore.
We know the RDA, once they close out their term, we no longer get that RDA money. Basically what we're doing here is they monkeyed with the laws. It used to be that once you stopped getting the tax increment, it all just went back to the taxing entities and whatnot. Now they've said, you know, you have to close out these project areas before. And what will happen is it will become new growth into the city and to the different taxing entities. You know, because we get new growth when new homes are built, new businesses are built every year. There's that new growth component.
Sure.
Well, they don't recognize that in our tax rate. as new growth. Unless we close these out, and then that will go into our new growth, and then that's why we'll see an additional.
So right now, the property owners are paying.
They're paying taxes.
They're paying their normal tax rate.
Yeah.
And we're only getting part of that.
Yeah, it's just not, it has something to do with the magic of that certified tax rate.
And the rest of it is going wherever.
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, it's just, I don't know where it goes. I like I say, it's part of that magic of that certified tax rate that
part would, of the magic of government.
I appreciate
so,
I
don't know
that
any. So, are they being taxed the full rate, or are they pumping out?
Yeah, they always were taxed.
So, this isn't going to increase their taxes.
No.
It's just who what flow. Comes to the city. If we closed out some of those RDAs that are done, that money that's being generated would the appropriate amount that it would be.
Yeah.
I say we get
come
the money.
To the city. Yeah.
So, how long has this been going on? Where we've had these seven.
Me too.
I mean, how many?
Some of them just closed in recent years. This is relatively recent for some. And some of them were like 20-year commitments, and they're just now starting to come off the books.
I just don't know why the moment they come off, we're not closing these out and
because
more money coming into the city. I mean, I understand like we're thinking they're gonna
because that changed.
Yeah,
but it was different. It used to just automatically come to
the
city.
Used to happen.
Yeah. The law, the RDA law changed.
Yeah.
And so now we have to close them out before we see that new growth. It didn't used to be that way.
And that's why there were advantages,
like what Dustin was saying, of keeping them open. But now, with the change in the laws, the advantages of getting the money are probably far outweigh the advantages of keeping them open.
So you were thinking it would be around 800,000 annually?
That would be if we closed them all out. That number would be less if we left the district open, at least for another year to see.
Yeah.
You know,
so leaving the district open, what would the revenue projection probably be?
I should have done the math.
Can we get Sunil to chime in as well? Sunil, you have something?
So I think the district would be a major.
Yeah, it is
part of
because
that.
Of the value of the property.
Yeah.
So I would imagine it might be even half that.
Okay. And I don't disagree with closing the six and leaving the district open. I'm just trying to understand.
And if it is something that you guys want to do, part of the reason we're having this discussion tonight is just to know, kind of thumbs up, yeah, look into this or leave it as is. If you want us to do it, then we'll go back. We'll actually run the numbers and bring those back to you to say if we close this, this is exactly what it would be. But I didn't want to do a whole lot of work and make the staff do a whole lot of work to chase this down. If you're like, no, just leave them. I didn't want them to know more what your pleasure was as to what to do with them.
Once we decide to do it, it's not, it's just passing a resolution by the RDA board saying we are officially closing them.
It's a lot easier to close it than it is to create it.
Yeah. So much easier to close it.
Yeah. And it's meant to be that way, as it should be.
Yeah.
So, what are your thoughts?
Well, I kind of
sounds like
I say we leave the district open to close the others.
Look at the others.
No, but for maybe
staff do a financial analysis.
Yeah. I think it's something we should reevaluate every year, and as others start to come off the books, I think that's just something we would put on a tickler to say, hey, there's these ones that rolled off this year. What do you want to do?
I'm curious. Have we done this before? Because I've never heard this discussion of do we close an RDA.
We didn't used to have to.
For many years, we didn't have any
to
close.
Okay. Because this is the first recollection I have of us even chiming in on this decision.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I would absolutely say
right.
thumbs up. I want
to. You want us to explore
yeah.
that
yes.
and bring back some hard numbers and then
yeah.
bring a resolution to you next year?
In the past, before the law that Brian is talking about, the county will close the RDAs and the RDA property values gets merged into the city's value, and not as a new growth like what Brian was explaining about as a regular. So the city does not get a benefit out of this area of development. And so we've been, Brian and Tim and everybody's been pushing the legislature to have that as a new growth coming into the city. That benefits the city. And then going back to Mr. Shelton's question, The RDA, when the rates are calculated, RDA by district has a different rate than South Jordan district. And so most of the RDA district's rate is a little higher than the South Jordan district rate to capture the budgeted amounts kind of thing. So in fact, by closing out, what they will be now paying is the South Jordan proper district rate, which is always will be a little lower.
Which is the is the RDA rate the certified tax rate?
Say again, Mike.
Is the RDA rate the certified tax rate? Because we know we're not at that. We are not at the 0004 for South Jordan City.
Would that
result in a tax cut for them?
So it's not linked or anyway related to the certified tax rate. So what happens is when the tax commission, the assessor's office, they accumulate all the data and the property values, the assessed values, and then from that they remove all the REA values. So once the RDA values are reduced, then the certified tax rates are calculated.
That's how it affects the certified
tax. If that answers your question. Yeah.
Patrick, are you okay with having the staff do the analysis on the six?
I am. I'm just interested in what the staff's recommendation is. So it's just right now, it's just to keep the district open but close the others out. Is that what the recommendation is?
In our preliminary look at it, that would be our recommendation.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I want to put it on the record and make it clear that budgets are so tight. We have not raised taxes for a general fund in South Jordan in for general projects such as keeping the city maintained. So it's very, very tight. And if there's a potential to generate some revenue from these RDAs that have lived their term and that we don't see addition coming from, I'd really interested in that.
Okay, we will do some deeper exploration and put some hard numbers in.
Thank you.
Speaking of which, as the mayor pointed out, we haven't done tax increases for a long time. I just keep it on the tickler every year, just to ask if there's any desire to do truth in taxation, to capture, either hold the tax rate steady or to capture a little bit of that inflationary growth. Those monies help us, obviously, to help offset the inflation that we see in our operation and maintenance costs across all budgets. One of the things that the department heads were tasked with this week is turning in their anticipated increase in costs for the cost of doing business, because all of our material costs and things that we use from outside providers are obviously going up. And for many years, we've asked that question, if we want to hold it steady or capture any part of that. So I ask you that question, if you want to do truth in taxation to capture a portion of that. More and more cities are starting to do that on a regular basis. When I met with the city managers last week, many cities hold that truth in taxation every year to either hold their rate steady or to capture a small portion of it. But knowing that we typically have not done that, it's one of my check boxes to ask the council.
A note along those lines. Another question that was asked to everybody who was at LPC yesterday. This is coming up in the legislature, and there are bill files proposed. There's not bills written yet. There's not language yet. But we were all asked to weigh in on potential changes to the process that I don't even know who in the legislature is looking at exploring, but they
sounds like multiple.
Yeah, they are looking at the potential of just a couple of different options, such as cities could actually capture the difference between where they're at and the certified tax rate without a truth in taxation hearing, but that would be the end of it. Or they could maybe do that plus a truth in taxation, but it would be capped at a certain percent. There's just different ideas floating in the legislature that they brought to us yesterday and said, weigh in on these things. Yeah. It is expected that we'll see
all
taxing.
Yes, all taxing entities. That's true. Yeah. So it is going to be interesting to see what comes out of the legislative session this year.
Some changes in this area.
Yeah.
And if it's let's not do it this year and see what the legislature does with it, that's fine too. So, but I just threw it out there to see what your appetite was for that.
Can we make it another year?
I think so. I think we can.
find a way to make it through that. And, you know, as in the previous years, that means our tax rate will go down. And then we can see where we're at with that.
I think my pleasure would be to, you know, let's look at the budget. Let's look at it from a needs perspective, mm-hmm. rather than let's just plan on this and then we'll make the budget. You know, let's make the budget from a perspective of what do we need,
and then
you know, hopefully we don't have to go there. But if we have to go there, then we understand why we're going there.
Exactly. Okay. All right. I'll check that box off. One other thing that I had in my notes that I've heard come up over the course of the year as it pertains to possible revenues is that of a ticket tax on ticketed events in our city. And with the new addition of stadiums and performance halls and those types of things, I wanted to bring that back up to see if that was something that you, again, want to consider. And whether or not that's something that we should work into and plan for in the budget to capture a ticket tax.
What are cities like Sandy with their Real Stadium? What have the Bees, have they all had ticket taxes?
That is a great question. I am not prepared with that.
Okay.
That answer. But if you want us to dive into it and see what other organizations do,
With entertainment
that.
Venues,
we can
I'd find that very helpful.
I'd like us to explore that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Again, that's part of why we have this meeting so early, is so that we can work on those things mm-hmm. in the budget. So
I'd find that very helpful. Yeah.
So explore the options of a ticket tax, what that would look like. Okay.
And perspective of what's happening in the market.
Okay. Yeah. It's a way that it would help us offset those costs that we incur for wear and tear on the infrastructure and other
policing and
takes.
Stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's justifiable because we have to buy police, extra police in those areas and stuff.
And two,
yeah.
The population that's choosing to attend a venue
mm-hmm.
aren't the ones that are trying to like pinch pennies to buy apples at the grocery store, right?
Yeah.
So it's a choice. And if you don't want to buy that ticket, don't choose to buy that ticket. But it's not a living expense like property taxes.
As you do your research, I'd be interested to find out if there's some type of limit. They say venues over, you know, 800 seats, then there's a ticket tax. Just, yeah.
Yeah, we'll look into that size of venue, type of activity.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, nonprofit status.
I would imagine that there are exemptions for, like, schools, you know, because they have a lot of ticketed events
yeah.
for their sports and drama.
Yeah, I don't want us to be trying to collect a ticket tax on every homecoming dance ticket or prom.
Or
yeah,
place.
Just yeah, community.
So we'll explore what those.
Is our kids' prom's going to cost $50 extra this year?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, that's true.
And then we'll also weigh that out against the increased cost to the services that we provide around those events.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that is the nexus of why we are looking at that, is to help us offset
that cost.
Those costs that we incur now.
And I like the way you stated that, though, that it is not a living expense in that it's not a property tax. What I don't want is for any additional maintenance costs for the infrastructure and whatever, you know, the wear and tear costs like that, to fall on the shoulders of every single resident, because every single resident isn't going to be attending that. And I agree, it's an opt-in kind of thing.
Yes.
If you're choosing to buy a ticket, then a nominal amount that would help us offset the costs of the maintenance for that, I think is, and I'm not talking about the ballpark. We don't own the ballpark, and we're not paying for the ballpark. But
this is the other,
you know, the infrastructure around, but things like that, the roads and things like that to get to.
Yeah.
I think we'll have to do an analysis to see.
We will. But again, I didn't want to go through a lot of work if you were like, no, we don't want to go there. If you're like, yes, explore that. Let's
mm-hmm.
see, you know, what those increased costs are. Does this help us offset those costs? And what's an appropriate way to apply that tool?
I like it.
Okay. That was kind of it for where I was at with new revenues, unless you guys have any other ideas of revenues.
So we'll get to the fun stuff.
How about the medical transport? How's that going? And is there more opportunity on that? Or are you going to go over that too?
I hadn't, but since you brought that up, yeah. Our interfacility transports is doing very well. It's a great service that we provide to the community. In fact, it is a model of a service that we provide to our community in that regard. We plan to continue doing that. We don't plan to expand it beyond what it is right now unless some things change in the marketplace. And if that does happen, we are positioned to do that.
Question along those lines. I appreciate you asking that. There had been some chatter that there might be conversations at the legislature about changing that and our ability to do so. Is that still a concern? Is that a concern that Chief Dawson might have?
I think Chief Dawson has been following those conversations very closely. We're talking the IFT's potential legislation that could impact our ability
to. Are we concerned about that? I mean, I know there was chatter about it before.
So there is some issues that are coming up, but I think they are going to try to push to get private entities to allow to license. Specifically, IHC is pushing that to be able to do their own interfacilities. So that could be concerning. I don't think it's going to impact us directly here with the relationship we have with the EU, but the possibility exists that it could change things in that portion of the industry.
Okay. As things come up, we'll follow that during the session, and please just keep, we'll keep an eye on that.
So a question I have around that, Mayor, if it's all right.
Yes, I'm just, of course.
Just curious if, if the marketplace changes, and we find that we have to exit that industry, will that, are we in a position where that would be difficult to do? We'd be laying off staff and maybe selling equipment.
It shouldn't impact us dramatically, I wouldn't think. I mean, timing-wise, we'll line up well with, I think, our addition of our next fire station and whatnot. I don't anticipate it being a dramatic change to what we've got. We've structured it in such a way that we're flexible to be able to grow and that's the other issue is, I mean, depending on how this goes and licensure, we may actually be able to grow that program as opposed to reduce it. So
if the legislation opens up and we can't stop it, we'd be pushing so it opens up to everybody. In which case, we could leave our current geographical boundary and expand rather than contract.
An additional opportunity.
So we could go into
bid on
neighboring
other
facilities where the chief is then well situated. So as we've been watching the legislation, first thing is, I mean, they'd be blowing up a historical monopoly way they give licenses for the last 30, 40 at least years, if not more. And so there's a lot of inertia that would be hard to do, but if they did overcome that inertia, then we would push, okay, if it's open, make it open to everybody. We stand well situated to grow, not shrink.
That's good to know. That's helpful to know for this.
But we have a legislative strategy in place to address it either way.
Does anybody have any ballpark idea? What does that interfacility transport generate in revenue for our city? Just a ballpark.
Gross is about a little over $2 million.
A year?
I was going to say
that's
it's just over $2 million.
So that's gross. So there's, we're taking out employee expenses and amortizing the equipment and so forth. So net's probably a good bit less than that.
Yes. I would say it maybe about $1 million.
About half.
We are saving. And the council resolution a long time ago, that money goes to its own fund to fund the apparatus and equipment.
Right.
Yeah. Helps directly fund our fire department.
Yeah.
That's how we great buy new fire trucks.
In times when we are, every penny matters, right? And that's as good as we grow.
And when it takes, 3 years to order a new fire truck.
Yeah.
That's how far out there. It's crazy. If we ordered a new fire truck today, it'd take 3 years for it to get here.
Wow.
And then I'm assuming it's priced at time of delivery?
They're all custom built, so we agree to that price before they start.
Have they actually ordered? Impressed.
We hope they
honor those contracts.
That's okay.
Deletion clauses. Anything else on revenues that you guys have on your mind?
Wish we had ideas. Because we're all
wish
crickets.
We, wish we could wiggle our nose. And...
So, once the legislature would approve all of
this is just a question. Our Summerfest is a loss, right? We lose money on the Summerfest.
Generally.
How is the Sojo Race Series? Is that a loss as well?
No, in fact, I was just talking with Matt Jorgensen. We actually had the cap enrollment at our race on Saturday. It was maxed out at 430. So, yes.
That is awesome.
It was fantastic.
We have one of the most successful race series, I think, of any of the cities in the state of Utah.
I think we do, too.
And we charge fees that cover the cost to put that program on.
Mm-hmm. So. I was talking to Matt on the previous Saturday at the Ruck race, the one on Veterans Day.
Mm-hmm.
And... that's when I started thinking, like, people like coming to those races. And if it's a revenue generator, do we put more investment into that and let more people come? We've already got the trails. We've got the personnel at the trails. I mean, I think that's something we could look at as a city as well.
Janelle might be able to speak more to this, but my understanding is that's really the capacity of
that's
the
it.
Event.
Okay.
When, you know, we just don't have... the venue and everything else to host 1,000 people for that event.
No.
So
but what
we would have to look
instead of 400.
Yeah,
could we possibly do that?
Yeah, there would be some staffing issues. We'd have to look
yeah.
at that. But yeah, I mean, obviously the increased participation helps to offset the increased costs.
Right. Because you've already got your set costs, and of course you'd have a few more personnel, but you've got the system, you've got the trails, you've got the setup. Kind of same. I don't know. It's just a thought. Not very many things we do as a city generate revenue, and that one's one of them.
We're with our numbers right now. We're pretty much at a threshold where, if we were to go above those like 400 numbers, we would require a lot more resources that would put us in the territory of like the half marathon and the marathon. That would it'd be that next big step where we'd have to raise some fees to catch up with those associated costs. So.
Okay.
Really
it's at a really interesting.
Right
yeah.
Okay. So our cap is about 400.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some are smaller caps
right.
depending on the location and what those routes can handle.
That's just a really, really enjoyed activity. Like, there's a lot of people really happy at those events.
It's a good idea when you're
it's
thinking about where we could
It's super successful.
Generate.
Yep.
And it goes. Back to how we used priority-based budgeting to evaluate our programs to figure out to
marathon.
Really get the most bang for our buck. Mm-hmm. And by doing away with that one event, we were able to do all of this, which has been
yep.
used.
Because this is benefiting more people. I mean, 400 people on Saturday were there. They were all happy, freezing cold and happy. And the ruck race was under attended. And I said to Matt, let's market this better next year. And anyway, I just think that program has grown in the last 4 years even.
And it's mostly our South Jordan residents, where before
yes.
that event was not. It was about half our people.
Yeah. There's still like West Jordan and Harriman people coming, which is great. Bring your money and come. But,
yeah.
but
it's because
super,
we have a really good reputation with a very
consistency.
Quality.
They run it well. It's fun. People are having a blast. So anyway,
if you haven't signed
up
for the last one of the year, you better do it quick because
yeah.
it will sell out.
And that's really good at having it. It's just been consistently really well done, and I wanted to bring that up. It is not losing money. It's generating. That's one of the few things we do
yeah,
as a
it's
city.
Covering its expenses. And we try to do that with all of our recreation programs where the fees cover the costs for offering
good.
The programs while keeping it so that people can participate.
Okay.
as we get into... the expenses of the budget, budget goals again this year are to, you know, focus on maintaining our maintenance and operation so that we can maintain the service levels. That's high on our list as we put this together, is that we continue to maintain service levels, that we continue to maintain our infrastructure, and that we continue to maintain our programs that we currently have, that we provide. The next part of that will be to maintain the existing staff that we have and the benefits associated with having that staff. I think that's important. We're able to do what we do because of the people that we have. And I feel strongly that we have to keep them whole and we have to keep them competitive. I know I've talked to some of you in my one-on-ones with you about other things that you want us to see or want us to do, what you want to see in the budget, but I wanted to allow you to have some discussion tonight. What are some of the other things that you want to make sure that we put a focus on? Councilman McGuire, I hope you won't mind me sharing that as we talked last week, one of those was on greater visibility with our public safety, making sure that our police is very visible and present in the community. A lot of the things that we hear from the residents is that they want to see more of that enforcement when it comes to speeding issues, when it comes to parking issues, when it comes to running stop signs. And so I've noted that as an area to make sure that we have that focus on. Are there other things that you would like us to make sure that we include so that as we look at where we fund things in the budget that we're addressing those issues?
You covered it, but it's important to me that we don't do anything, we don't start missing things where we have deferred maintenance issues. You know what I mean? Where it's going to end up costing us more down the road because we didn't do something today. So I don't want to anything that's going to kick the can down the curb and it's going to cost us more money later than if we were just taking care of it. So, and I know we just recently had the meeting where we went over streets and roads and talking about all the treatments we're putting on that. That's great. I think we just need to make sure. I don't want to create a burden for a future council to have to address because, you know, we didn't stay on top of it. And we see many cities, especially on their street and roads, where they've let it go so far that they don't even know how to deal with it. So.
To that point, my brother serves on the West Jordan City Council.
Yeah.
And their staff has informed them that they need $27 million to maintain their roads.
A lot of cities have to usually end up bonding.
Yeah.
So like
and large amounts to get caught up.
Yeah.
So if you can avoid that, you're well ahead.
So many failings.
Yeah. Salt Lake City will be having to take another bond in a couple of years. They've already sent for their roads.
Yeah. And I just love how we do it where we're strategic about it. And if you do this treatment at this interval, then you don't have to do the tear out replacement later. And so you do the treatments at the right time intervals. Then it makes the roads last longer and it just saves money, you know, overall over the years. And I just want to make sure we stay completely on top of that. Okay. And the same thing on vehicles and equipment, those things cost a ton of money. I want to make sure that we continue to maintain our vehicles and equipment properly so they last. Just, you know, our buildings, yes. Building maintenance, you know, just let's just wait. I just don't want us doing stuff that's going to later on cost us more money later. So.
100% agree with everything you just said.
Yeah.
Pennies spent now save dollars.
Yeah. Yeah.
So on that note, we got a compliment last week when I was at NLC from a member of the Boise City Council. He's got friends and family that live here, and he grew up here back in the day or something. Anyway, he comes to South Jordan. He's familiar with our city. And he brought up our roads, and he said, from an infrastructure standpoint, as somebody who thinks that way, he talked about our roads, and he said, you guys have such nice roads. He lamented that Boise's one of their region is the only place in America where they don't actually own their roads. The county still owns them. And he was frustrated. And it's another level of bureaucracy that he said is so hard. I said, we really like being able to control our own destiny with our roads. But he said, but you guys have better roads than the drive from Boise to South Jordan. You have better roads than where I stop anywhere along the way. We talked about it. And he asked what it is that we do. Anyway, so I just talked a little bit about why that matters. And he said, we would give anything in Boise to be able to control that ourselves. Because they have a lot of, he feels like, deferred maintenance and they can't get things done. They can't get potholes filled in a timely manner because they don't get to control that. And anyway, so this is just a compliment from the council member from Boise that had strong feelings, positive feelings about the roads here because he's experienced it. And so I agree with what you said. Staying ahead of that, staying on top of that is key. Another thing that matters to me, we have a lot of cities around us that have stopped plowing snow in neighborhoods, and it's all a financial decision. It comes down to finances, and we don't want to have to raise taxes because we can no longer afford to plow snow in neighborhoods, but those are the service levels that we aim to continue to maintain. And if there is a way for us to continue to maintain those, I'd like to know. And if there literally isn't, I'd also like to know.
Okay. No, this is great. This helps us as we structure the
budget. One of the things that in my business we always talk about is it's one thing to do great service and provide value, but it's quite another to communicate that value. And so the fact that we have an exceptional system of maintaining our roads, we all can sit around the table and go, yay, us, but we have to communicate that value back to the residents so they know that we're being good stewards with their tax dollars, and they know that our staff is addressing this in an exceptional way, superior to neighboring cities. I think that communication back to the residents is not only a responsible thing to do, but it's a smart thing to do. So they recognize, sometimes they go, oh, that's right, we do have better roads, and they don't really know it until we tell them that they know it. Does that make sense? So it's the piece of telling them some of these things that we do that we don't think about telling them, but we need to tell.
Yeah,
it's a story.
We just had this presentation very recently on our roads.
Yep.
Maybe we need some social media and
absolutely
stuff in the newsletter and so forth.
Because they don't know
on that topic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We've done a little bit in social media on some of these things. It's been a few
good
years, so yeah, it wouldn't hurt to
plug it in.
Maybe,
we have a whole lot of
yeah
new residents in the last few
yeah
years too.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I appreciate it.
Because you can have a value, but if you don't communicate it, nobody knows.
Any other service areas that you feel passionate about, programs?
Well, I'd love to see us be able to do more sidewalk repair.
You and me both.
Yeah.
So I had a list of people in my neighborhood.
Right.
Yeah.
Ray Garrison has a plan for that, actually. I was discussing with him a few days ago. So
he's
we're going to change up our strategy a little bit. I can't remember if he's going to be asking for a little bit more money or not, but
He has
a plan, so we're going to try to.
I've just
get
wondered
more done
if we're to the point
yep
going forward in the future, if we need to have a third crew. If that's just this with this growth of the city, I know we have two crews right now and it's just sidewalk repair. If we're just the point
the
where
trees
we literally need just a third crew, because I mean, some people I know they've waited this whole summer,
yeah,
to get their sidewalk repaired and. Now, you know, my guess is we don't do it during the winter months, so they're at best it might get done in the spring, but I know there are still ways down on the list, so it may not be till like July. So a year and a half just seems a little long.
It is.
just out of curiosity, if, you know, we use the HUD funds for the ramps.
Yeah.
But seems like it could be argued it's an access issue. If
it's a trip hazard.
If,
for sure.
Well, I mean, no,
that's
you're not
going to
take
that's
a wheelchair.
Sure.
Yeah,
some of those sidewalks, you know, you're not getting over that.
We attempted a few years ago. Oh, sorry, Don, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, I was just,
yeah,
you know, making a theoretical argument that maybe we could use more of those funds in that way, and sounds like maybe not, but.
We could look at that just real quickly. So we tried using a contractor to help keep up with the work, and it didn't work out great. We got just some really not great quality contractors. And so Ray's come up with a different plan to use contractors that we think is going to work better. So I think over 2025, we'll see us being able to get to those a bit quicker as he plans on implementing that plan.
I heard that as a yes, right?
Yeah.
It might have accidentally slipped out, but
yeah,
that was a good confirmation.
600 miles of sidewalk and park strips with trees.
Yeah.
And
which is going to keep growing.
Yep.
I'm curious, does the sidewalk repair come, like, if yours is worse, your priority, or is it like you get in queue and that's
you get in line.
And that queue, we're replacing a lot of sidewalk, and we're making no headway on the amount of open work orders we have.
Yeah.
And so we got to change that tactic and come in and try something different and then get caught up and start.
So I promise if you get caught up, I will not do a social media post about it like I did a few years back.
That's what got us so far behind.
Oh. I can tell you there's one way to accelerate it, and that's if a council member trips, falls, and scuffs their knee and elbow.
Are you volunteering?
Moans to
Rachel,
the city manager about it.
Well, I know there's
you
one not too far from Rachel's house. She can film me tripping on it.
Kind of out earlier. You get pushed up in the queue. I know that. My elbow's okay now. But.
So my daughter has to live about prevention. Have we done any education to the residents about what kind of trees?
Yes.
Or if there are trees, it's starting to happen. Can the city help them get the tree out, or is there any?
So yes, we have been doing a lot of education. We've changed the code to restrict the kinds of trees that can go in park strips to help us with that. It's also not just for the sidewalks, but it's also for power lines and things overhead. We've really made an effort to try to steer people to the right place. As to whether or not the city can help, it depends on the tree, the park strip, the location, and some other things. There are some trees that we have responsibility for that we go and take care of. There are others that we can help homeowners find the resources to help themselves to resolve that.
Because I would think prevention would be
absolutely
a lot better than having to do all this concrete work.
And as we work through our water conservation programming and we talk to people about the landscaping and things, we try to encourage them to do things that won't tear the sidewalk up.
Yeah, about 6 years ago, we really tackled kind of that preventative aspect of making changes.
Because over the past 2 years, I've seen a lot of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And as you know, we have a lot of new areas now, and as those areas get a few years of growth, those little trees that were so cute, not only do they do damage to our sidewalks, but to the curb and gutter pan as well, which mm-hmm. then affects drainage issues, which then creates puddling and mosquitoes. And so it's all part of a bigger system that we're working on.
Okay. Keeps you busy with the mosquitoes, Kathy.
All right. I appreciate that feedback. If you think of other things, if you'll share those with us, we'll make sure that those stay in the budget.
Still supportive of the DARE program.
Are still at the top. Of the which one?
The DARE program.
DARE program.
Yeah.
I think the chief even hasn't asked for that coming up in the budget. So.
And we're required to provide the officers in the schools, right?
Like, yes, so that's... our school resource officers, we do have some requirements for that. And there were changes in the last legislative session about school security and some of those things. And our chief has been very involved in that. If you'll remember, Lieutenant Pennington, who used to work for the city, is now the state czar for school security and safety. So we work closely with him. He was trained very well. In the essence of time, I want to move on. Typically in this first meeting, I bring back to you any new programs that have been proposed by council members, community members, staff members. Last year, you remember, I brought the Urban DARE program and several other things that we had put through the process. This year, I only have one program that I wanted to bring to you. It has been vetted through the priority-based budgeting program. I'm going to ask Rachel to come up. Rachel is the one that's been doing a lot of work on this particular program, and his staff has reviewed it. We wanted to bring it to your attention to see if you want to give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down and whether or not we should include it as a new program in South Jordan. So, Rachel, I will let you explain this program.
Well, I just want to start by saying I appreciate the ability to be able to do this. I know we're looking at tight budgets, and as I've gone through this journey that I'm going to share with you a little bit, I kept looking for what I call a hard stop. Like, what is going to tell me I need to stop pursuing this when this no longer has value? And I never got to that point. And so now I'm here presenting to you, and I hope to express to you the value that I've seen. But I want to give you the full picture, full transparency. So let's start a little bit with a story. So about 2 years ago, I was in Asheville, North Carolina, visiting my mom, who lives up there now, and I came across this super cute honey shop called the Asheville Bee Charmer, and was buying some honey, because I love honey, and went in there, and I saw that sticker, Asheville Bee City, USA, North Carolina, and I kind of had this moment, and I asked the shop owner, I said, wait, this is a thing? Like, it's like Tree City, USA? And they said, yeah, it's just like that kind of designation. And I was like, huh. Well, of course, the first thing I do is go, what is this? Who does this? So it's done by the Xerxes Society. And
what society?
The Xerxes Society, X-E-R-C-E-S, Xerxes Society. And I looked, I was like, okay, well, why haven't we heard about this? Why are we not Bee City in the Beehive State? And I came across this map.
See this? State of Utah. So the little triangles are bee campuses and the oranges are cities. There's not one bee city in the entire state of Utah.
In the Beehive State.
In the Beehive State.
Crazy.
But we weren't named after
that. And so, of course, that gets my mind like going. I'm like, why are there no bee cities in this state? And anyway, so I have that kind of back of my head. I kind of brought it to Melinda just as a, oh, hey, look at this, you know, kind of interesting fact. And then we announced that the Salt Lake Bees were coming to South Jordan a year later. And I started kind of tickling at the back of my head. So me as a, you know, I'm generally marketing, communications, outreach, branding, right? Those are all things that are my purview. So I start thinking, huh, I wonder if this is something that might make sense in the light of the bees coming. And I started kind of investigating a little more. So, you know, why would becoming a bee city be something we should pursue? So one of the big things that obviously from the perspective I'm coming from is strengthening the city's identity and branding. One of the big things that kept being a conversation ever since I've been with the city is, what is South Jordan's brand? We have this great agricultural past, and then we're one of the fastest growing cities in the state. And we're a burgeoning suburb, and we've got all these really amazing commercial centers and all these things. So what is our brand? And I saw the opportunity here potentially to kind of use this bee idea as a part of that. But I don't believe branding should exist in a vacuum, right? Like, it's got to be able to support all the rest of our programs. No branding for the sake of just branding, right? Of just having some cute bee on all stuff. So as I started looking into it, I believe that it can elevate our existing programs, including recreation, parks and open space, and economic development. So, and I'll go into a little bit of that. And then also to highlight our commitment to sustainability and quality of life. And I'll get into why that is. So commitments. If we were to become a bee city, there's a few things that would be required by the Xerxes Society, just like there is for the Tree City USA. And one of those is to establish a committee to lead the pollinator conservation efforts, to create and enhance pollinator habitat by planting native plants and reducing pesticide use. So pesticides, we don't use very much here in the city, but herbicides are under that. So herbicides are kind of what we use. Add pollinator-friendly practices into city policies and plans. Host or co-host annual pollinator events, so there's an outreach element. Also, some of that is with signs and an online presence, so website and communications type stuff, things I do. And then, of course, apply for renewal.
Hold on.
Oh, sorry.
I love this. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Got it.
So benefits. So Xerxes Society, kind of as they've been reaching out to various cities, campuses across the state. And by the way, the two campuses were USU and University of Utah. And I'll get into that a little bit too.
Both which I find in South Jordan.
Yes. Yeah. Well, a fascinating fact I found out in all of my research, USU, the Bastion Center, actually has a bee habitat that they maintain. Right now. And I went and visited it, and I got a little picture. I should have included a picture in this, actually. But I'll go into that a little bit. But a few benefits here. Beautiful landscaping, resilient cities. We all know pollinators are extremely important to keep our flowers beautiful, our parks beautiful, and then also for our local growers, our nurseries, our farms. We still have several farmers here in the city. Healthier neighborhoods. When we have more beautiful neighborhoods, people are getting out. They connect people to nature more. Essentially, all of this goes down to healthier, stronger community. And of course, a little bit of economic development, supporting local farmers and growing small businesses like nurseries, things that have growing elements to them. And then of course, the Salt Lake Bees, there is that element too. All right, so strategic alignment. I, of course, am a nerd, as Don Tigi knows. I went and talked to him many times about this because I'm like, well, if I'm going to be pursuing this, I want to make sure it aligns with any of our strategic priorities. So as we started digging in, and in this packet I handed out, it goes into the specific elements of each of our strategic priorities. I just kind of summarize it here on the slide. But obviously, it's most aligned with providing desirable amenities in open space, engaging the community it's most aligned with, ensuring sustainable growth. It's more aligned. That's kind of that step down. And then there's a few that are less aligned in terms of each element that it meets under those kind of subheadings that you can see there in the report. And then, so overall, we determined it was a less aligned, which I think is that typically quartile three is what we talk about that in terms of priority-based budgeting. So a quartile three program, we have several of those in the city. So obviously cost. With any new program, there's a cost associated with it. I want to thank Colby and Ray and Janelle and helping me figure out what would the realistic cost be behind something like this. And so I developed three levels potential of how far into this program would we want to be. I would be recommending just that entry level because I would believe that that's kind of going to give us the most bang for our buck. It in the packet you have there, it does lay out the details of what each of those mean in terms of what those commitments would be. And I will point out the difference between, obviously there's a small jump between level one and level two. Level three, large jump. That's a new FTE for manual weed removal versus herbicide use. And that requires purchasing a truck and all of the equipment associated with it. So that's why there's those levels. But I wanted to put everything in front of you, do my due diligence of showing all the potential ways we could be involved in this program. Okay, so one of the cool things that I discovered along the way is there are multiple stakeholder and partnership opportunities. And I also reached out to the Xerxes Society to ask them, what do these committees look like? Can you have public-private partnerships? Because we have a lot of private landowners here in the city. So what I discovered is, I'm just gonna pull up this whole list for you, of all the various entities that might be interested, have some, sorry, let me get through the whole list here, and then I'll point out what all my various like underlining and coding and stuff. So I grouped these by government, nonprofit, and for-profit entities. Because I wanted to do my due diligence for you all, I met with a couple of these because USU Bastion Center, that's when I found out about their habitat there. They specifically brought up to me, and you'll notice that little star that says potential financial support. I basically was reaching out to them to say, do you have somebody that could be on this committee, you know, that would be interested? Is this something that you would support? And all of the ones I met with, overwhelmingly, yes. In their case, they mentioned that they got their current bee habitat through a 4-H grant, and they said they're applying for another one this next year, and they said, oh, we'll just put that it can be anywhere in the city, and that'll meet your habitat requirement. I'm like, well, I don't know if we're doing this yet. And they're like, it's okay. We put it in there, keep it broad, and we can that way we can make that choice and put it anywhere in the city potentially. So they already have somebody who's so on board with it, they're already putting it into their plans. So obviously, I talked with Bingham Creek Regional Park. We have a couple of representatives here. When we're building new parks, having pollinators and various options there in terms of building our landscaping and flowers and whatnot. And then I also wanted to, I underlined the ones that we're members in terms of our member agencies. So, I mean, our technically City Parks representative is us. Jordan River Commission, we're a member agency. They also have their own pollinator initiatives with the monarchs and pollinators there. And then obviously Bingham Creek Regional Park. I also met with Merit Medical in Rio Tinto, and I found out some things. Rio Tinto I met with because of them being a large landowner in the city, and I knew they had conservation efforts, and talked to them about it. And they would be they said, yes, this aligns with what we do. They have potential funds to help with the programming. And then Merit Medical has their whole garden and their greenhouses, and they were like, very excited. Their whole garden's organic, so they don't use herbicides or pesticides in their garden. So they were very much on board. So there is a lot of opportunity, and they would be very happy to provide their master gardener to be on a committee, for example. Oh, so cool. A lot of opportunity for public-private partnership. Yeah.
You have Daybreak listed on there. I know they've done Daybreak Honey for decades now.
Yes. Yep. Didn't meet with them only because of the connection to the Salt Lake Bees. And I just didn't want to jump the gun on any of that. I didn't want them to get too excited. Does that make sense? Okay.
The Lamborghini Bentley dealership has interest into this. The Bentley has farms out there bee farms. And,
no
and,
way.
Yeah.
See, I keep learning about more of these.
Because I went over there.
They told you about their bee farms?
Yeah. I got some honey. I got some Bentley honey.
No way! Mm-hmm. That is so cool.
Yeah.
You can buy honey at...
Yeah. I did not buy a Bentley, just so everyone knows.
So, I thought you were going to next
or Lamborghini.
You're like, all I can afford is honey. Yeah.
They've never even told me about the honey, so they can tell I probably can't even afford the honey.
Yeah.
So just as you can see, like you all are thinking of some of the same stuff. I kept thinking, oh, well, Daybreak's had their honey. They've had hives on that property for years. So, yeah.
Question. You have AAI, which is one of the charter schools.
Yeah.
So why did you choose that one?
Found out through a Southward Journal article that they have a beehive program. I basically just kept coming across one thing after another during this whole process of looking into all of this.
So the director of AAI is a South Jordan resident.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So there's just so much opportunity. So I think building the committee would not be a problem. Mm-hmm. I think we have a lot of opportunity. And like I said, public, private, potential financial support, all that stuff. Now that I've said that whole thing, I do want to, full disclosure, talk about some considerations. So like I said, I appreciate staff partners. I've talked with Colby, I've talked with Janelle, and some of the concerns that they brought up. And I want to be, like I said, I want to bring those up. So some of the concerns that have been brought up in terms of reducing the pesticide or herbicide use, there is a really fine line there for that to be manageable and having the capacity. Because what that requires is removing weeds manually. And that's the large reason why I went in and said, okay, this level one program, for example, is a volunteer manual removal effort. So that's a large reason why I did that. Now, if we were wanting to get more into that going forward, we would have to watch that line. And I do have Colby here if you wanted to give a couple of your points. Like he's my big critic and friend, and I appreciate him. And so I definitely, if you have a few points there, I would love for you to add them.
So just a couple things that are required as part of the resolution that Bee City USA requires. One is adopting an integrated pest management plan, which is very intensive. They give you time to put it together, but generally speaking, anytime you are implementing a pest management plan, there are levels of controls when you're talking about pests. And in the parks and open space world, when you're talking about pests, you're talking about both plants or animals and then plants. Most of what we target are invasive species of plants, which at times are beneficial to pollinators. In addition to that, the herbicides that we use can have a lingering effect for the pollinators. We spend our time in the top tier of the controls because it's the most economical way for us to attack the plants. For us to start reducing our herbicide use, it would be significant. It would take us a long time to get there. So depending on what their perspective is on how we address that, I'm not quite familiar with it. That's one of the areas that I would address. The other is the habitat that they talk about. They expect to see your habitat grow every year. They're not specific on what that looks like or what size that should be, but that is setting aside land where you are no longer using pesticides or herbicides, and you are encouraging growth, these pollinating plants growth that are friendly to the pollinators. We have a few of those that exist already. City Hall is a good example, and we plan to enhance City Hall even next year. But to add that every year means we're reducing what our current practice is every year, so it will require more resources. So those are my big concerns.
As we start doing though our park strip conversions, and we'd still be putting plants in, and that would that count towards that growth though?
I think potentially it could.
One of the things the Xerxes Society mentioned too, and you can speak to this whether we use pesticides, but are the trees. And currently we have a program where we're adding, I think we got grant money to put in new trees every year for the next few years, is that right?
We have funding this year.
This year.
We'll see if we get funded.
Okay. So trees count. They call, if they're flowering trees, they count. They say they're the meadows of the sky. So that's something to keep in mind. Any tree that's a flowering tree that we plant counts towards, that is habitat. So like you said, they're not specific to it, but there's definitely some considerations in terms of that. And I wanted to be thoughtful and to make sure I mentioned that. The other element as well.
Can I mention one more thing?
Oh yeah, absolutely. He's got to head out.
I have a daughter who's having a concert at UVU that I need to get to. I just lost my train of thought. And I apologize.
Have fun at the concert.
Get out of here.
He's already there.
Thank you.
Flowering trees, would grow the habitat. Cutting down pollinators.
I shouldn't have mentioned the concert because that threw off my train of thought. I got a ride getting outside. But anyway, those are my concerns.
Can I ask a question, Colby? What you're talking about that it would take us quite a while to catch up from is weed growth. Being able to make. Okay. I mean, that's a valid concern, because I think this is an idea worth exploring, but however, we can't be taken over by weeds in
right.
the city.
So one example of that is at Hillside Park in Daybreak, one of the hillsides at Hillside Park has been cheatgrass has taken over the hillside for a few reasons. We're addressing those reasons. There's a resident who's very vocal, very friendly and very kind, but very vocal about the condition of that hillside. His desire would be that we landscape it with wildflowers. If we do that and invasives come in, the only way to get rid of the invasives or the noxious weeds that are on the state's noxious weed list is to go mechanically remove them. Because if we spray a herbicide, it will kill all of those flowers. But if we just do grasses, then we can spray a herbicide that will kill any weeds, but not the grasses. So it's that fine line of determining how do we best do this, knowing that we will have to dedicate resources to it, or we'll lose the hillside again.
Yeah.
So run me one more time on the phase, the first phase, you know, first
step.
Can we use herbicide on step one? Is that what you said? Or?
So one of the things that the Xerxes Society talks about is non-economical uses of herbicide,
yeah.
essentially. So if we're talking about our fields or usable space, all of that those are things we're using those spaces and we need to use the product for that. What they're saying is they just want to see progress in terms of reducing pesticide use or herbicide use in overall, essentially. And there's several ways.
Well, that's going to happen just by natural development in the city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there is some of that, but
yeah.
And one of the things Colby mentioned that I appreciate, and I don't want to take up too much time, but was that City Hall? I didn't realize we already only do manual removal at City Hall and in City Center. So that's one area we don't use pesticides, which I kind of like that. I think it's cool.
It's good to know a lot of residents like that if we advertised it.
Yeah, and that the other part of this program too, as I mentioned, there's outreach. It's education of the public. So being involved in this program, there's a big educational element, and it's encouraging and educating residents to reduce their pesticide use as well. I did also want to mention, just for sake of time, I don't want to take up too much more of Dustin's time, was I talked with Janelle, and one of the things that she brought up, so there is an event portion, and in that level one, this is something where it's like a kind of a part of an existing event. We do something where we mention pollinators, or we have a pollinator element of that existing event. And she's always very thoughtful about capacity. She said they were very fortunate to get additional staff this kind of last go around of the budget, but that was to maintain current service levels, right? So always when we're talking about a new program or adding additional things, capacity is always a concern. Did I summarize that okay? Okay. Did you have anything else to add?
I don't think so. I think in that first level that we had talked about, just piggybacking on other events, or like, for example, one of our races is the Earth Day race. If we do a bee theming and it's like beeline to the finish and our theming of medals and stuff, that's not really a huge added cost or an added capacity, and that's more the level that
we were thinking of. Yeah.
Question for you then.
Yes, ma'am.
So level one requires that some kind of event is, I mean, we're checking boxes and
yes.
turning it into these bee people.
Yes.
But we've got Summerfest, we've got Earth, I mean, we have multiple places. Could there, like, let's say you do the Earth Day thing, does it have to be staffed by staff, or can't some of these volunteers on the committee sit at those booths? I mean, we don't have to have personnel on payroll,
so,
do we?
So absolutely,
okay.
we can have volunteers. Now, the disclaimer there, so okay, two elements of that. There are, with Rio Tinto and Merit Medical in particular, they look for those types of events for their staff to volunteer for. So we have a potential for all volunteers. However, when we're planning for budgeting items, we can't necessarily plan for that. That's why I don't account for that in terms of our financial commitment, just because we want to make sure if we're going to commit to this program, we have the funds we need. However, we could potentially grow it through volunteer efforts and money given by, I don't know, committee members or the various businesses around. So there are opportunities there. Yes.
Any other questions?
So how are we going to integrate the bee and the tree that we have? And so I know we're talking, one's a logo and one's something, and this isn't really a logo, but
you know, we're kind of known for the South Jordan tree, and then we're implementing the B. So, yeah.
So the B, so that's really kind of up to us going forward. This would be something I can't. So one of the things that a lot of the cities do is they come up with their own stickers and stuff. So this is just me playing around.
It's
cute. So it's playing around with it. So we have an opportunity to say, hey, we're a B city, just like we have. There's the Tree City logo we put on stuff and various things. And it's not a part of our city branding per se. However, if we go into the future and we say, hey, we're the first B city in the state of Utah, that is something we could start to integrate into our greater brand. That would be something to decide over time. Obviously, a greater branding campaign is a whole other beast. But in terms of identity, community, building around some sort of vision or idea, I felt like this is something that could really work and could draw people.
Are you thinking that this would replace the tree?
Not necessarily.
No?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
And that would be a whole conversation
okay.
for sure. And you could probably do both. I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
So I like
yeah,
what you said.
Around.
This could
yes.
be a supplemental piece, but I would in no way ever vote that this is our city logo.
Oh, yeah. No.
This is dependent on another company and their brand, and we never want to be co-branded. We are a city standalone by ourselves.
So you'll notice I only brought up the Salt Lake Bees coming just a couple of times.
Yeah.
And yeah, home of the bees. Yeah, I could see with that comment if you that was me having fun with it. The other option that I had for this was you know, first in the state and stuff. It doesn't necessarily have to be associated with that, but that is kind of what got my brain thinking.
And I like
about
the
it.
Hive that Utah has. We don't even have the hive in there.
Oh. Yeah.
The hive
actually
symbol.
Yeah.
So we could take that to a
yeah.
city
and this
level.
isn't for city branding, like our flag or
yeah.
our
no.
emblem or our pins
but
or anything
right.
like that. But it's supplemental. It's mm-hmm. an additional new thing.
It's like
right.
our Sojo logo. That's not our city logo, but we use Sojo here and there.
And that yeah, that represents kind of our rep programs because it's more
right.
fun or whatever. And this could represent our, you know, our sustainability, our you know,
environmental
elements, things like that. The
commitment to quality of life.
Right, quality of life. That's really what this comes down to for me is quality of life.
These are a great summary. But I would no way ever support changing our city brand to this because we don't want to be dependent on some other.
What, you don't like the yellow? You're just too into the green.
Well, didn't think about that.
I do
like the yellow. But the tree is us. Like, we've had that forever. But I think this
yeah.
is fun to supplement. Yeah.
All right. I don't want to take up too much.
Anyway, Council, do you have a pleasure or should we pursue this as a new program in the city?
I like it personally.
I do too. Level
do
one.
Okay.
Yeah.
At a level
one.
One?
Especially if there's potential for donations from some of the partners that you listed that said, hey, we might be willing to go in on that. We might be able to do this without actually generating additional really cost. I think Janelle's idea of beeline to the finish and things like that, working it into the Earth Day race, darling, cute and minimal, right?
I just wanted to mention having volunteers. I don't think as a city we use volunteers enough, and that was something I just wrote down. I'm going to talk one-on-one with you. But there's so many opportunities for volunteers, and we really staff most of what we do. Our staff is exceptional. But if we start pulling in more volunteers, there's a ripple effect to that, and it's positive. Having more people like participate at the city events, just because they want to. I think we'd find a plethora of people that want to be a part of things. If
yeah.
we start, I mean, I know it takes staff to support the volunteerism, but that's something we could do better at. And so I love that you've talked to people that want to be on committees that aren't paid staff.
Right. Okay, we will add that. We will also continue to evaluate programs in the city through our priority-based budgeting. As you can tell, there was a lot of, vigorous discussion amongst staff as we vetted this program. And we had some very healthy discussions about the pros, the cons, and those kinds of things, as we do with all of our programs, because we are looking for the most efficiency. With that being said, I did want to ask the question, are there any existing programs that you want us to take a deep dive through priority-based budgeting? Or are there any new programs that I missed somehow during the course of the year that you still want us to take a look at?
Are there any that you recommend that we consider stopping?
We haven't found any.
Okay.
Our team, Don and his staff, are continually monitoring programs
okay.
and ferreting out efficiencies everywhere we can, but they have not brought forward any that they say, hey, this one's This is one, like the marathon, that we should do away with and reallocate things. Over the course of the last year, we haven't found one that they've recommended that we do away with yet.
Okay.
But we'll continue. We work with all the department directors. We go through programs regularly. Okay. With that, I want to keep us moving. We got several more items. I wanted to give Sunil a few minutes. There are a couple items that he wants to walk you through as they relate to some things that will affect us in the upcoming budget year. So, Sunil.
So, Main Council, there are a couple of bigger ticket items that we have to address, and we have been talking about it for the last couple of years. Time has come that we need to take care of, at least, well, some of them. I'm just going to give you a little bit of a timing as to what the staff is thinking. First one is the water tank, and that needs to be built way out there. Everything is good to go there. That water tank is part of the water rate study. And also, the goal is to issue a bond for the water tank and fund it and pay for it that way. Timing on the bond, the construction needs to, our city engineer and his team will be going out and bidding the project within the next month or two, and construction may start in July, starting July. So I need to put funding in place, and I need to work backwards to make sure all the documents and everything that we need to do legality-wise are done before the funding is in place. So you will see a resolution. I'll bring a resolution to the council, maybe February-ish, or March at the latest, for reimbursement. And so that will be the beginning. What that does is if any expenditure that we have to incur prior to issuance or closing of the bond proceeds will be able to cover that. So we are covered there. After that, then we will go through the bonding, resolution to issue bond, which basically sets up the deadline or timing as a public hearing and perimeters and all those kind of things. And most of you are familiar with that. And then you obviously there's a waiting period. And then after that, then you have a public hearing on the bond issuance and then go out and do all other kind of stuff before we sell and close the bond. So that's coming. And the goal is to, as of today, my thinking is that we will close on that bond maybe September 2025. Question? Yes.
We talked several times about Congressman Burgess Owens helped us get some funding for the water tank, right?
Yeah.
Portion of the water tank is being funded with that work that was done?
Yeah. So the funding through the federal government was about $1,750,000. And the water tank will be closer to about $30 million.
Oh.
So continues to go up literally every week.
Yeah. So we will incorporate that funding part of the whole.
I knew it was there, but I didn't know it was that small of a portion.
Yeah.
At the time when we went back there and we requested it, we're looking at a $14 million tank. The tank hasn't grown in size and stuff really.
From 14 to 30?
It's been the cost of construction. So from that standpoint, yeah, we've been looking at that. So we're grateful for all Congressmen.
Yes.
Can,
I just thought
can,
but the world changed on us.
Can you just go over real quickly, just you know, the importance of the water tank and why we need it. I mean, this is not, we're talking a $30 million tag. I think we just need to talk about that for just a second. So,
yeah, it's part of the big, our water supply master plan for the city. And so, Brad and Ray can speak to it more, but essentially that's needed to serve the west side of the city to meet the needs for future growth.
And if a water tank didn't go in, what would happen?
We would not have the supply we need.
Yeah, it'd be tough. You could somewhat try to float off Jordan Valley system, but it just wouldn't work. There's a certain elevation.
It creates a pressure issue? Is that
and there's fire flow.
Okay.
And all these other things that are built into a water tank. So there's a certain elevation that we draw a line that says these existing tanks can serve that And we can't build past that without the additional tanks to serve that water to those areas.
And we were going to build $6.8 million to serve the rest of Daybreak, but we added another $1.5 million to serve part of the Rio Tinto area. So hopefully in the development agreement, whenever that moves forward, we can recoup that cost from the Rio Tinto development, but it's down the road.
Yeah, they are anticipating that Rio somewhere that we're moving to next year capacity. It's been brought up.
And
how aware they are day by day is different.
I can't believe it costs that much.
It has been brought up.
Make sure you remind us to include
it.
It's on my list.
And once we actually get bid costs, we'll actually know what that dollar amount is. But, I mean, we've taken some stabs at it.
We know the percentage of the volume.
Yeah.
Back
to something. Where's the actual location? I know you've told us, but.
It's a little south of 118 and west of U-111 there.
It's on the Abacus Highway.
West
side.
On the west side of Abacus.
So
actually on Rio property.
No.
Just south of the incorporation line.
The annexation missed it by that much.
Yeah.
So is it technically
from the
county.
It's unincorporated. So we have to go to them and get a building permit.
Yes.
Do we want to try to annex that little sliver of land into South Jordan?
It's probably easier to get the building permit.
It wasn't along the section lines and stuff.
We like to control our destiny. We said that. We like to own our stuff.
Yeah. It would be ideal, but I don't think it.
Do we own the land?
We own the land now.
Yes.
So we own it.
We own the land.
Oh,
but
we own it, but it's in county territory.
It's just in Salt Lake County. We
also have a lot of tank in West Jordan.
Yeah.
Which makes me focus.
We've already went to the county. We've already got the permits. So
it's the West Jordan.
Okay.
And the rest of the bond, would you cover for everybody's knowledge here? How the rest of the bond would be paid? Rio Tinto is planning on covering their portion eventually.
That would be today's estimate, maybe $2 to $3 million.
Of the 30?
Yes.
Oh, a small amount.
Yeah, because it's just the
$1.5 million.
Yeah, it's $1.5 million added to the 6.8. So it's an 8.4 million gallon tank or whatever.
Wow.
You sure there's no gold? There's lots of space in those mountains over there.
Plenty of rocks in my backyard.
It's funny, but the purchase agreement actually says we can't mine there.
Are there any alternatives for water pressure besides a tank? Or I mean, as you looked at, is that it? That's the only solution to make it happen.
So part of that master plan, Jordan Valley is only going to go a certain distance, and they're not going any higher to serve water. So we have to build the tank higher than the surface water. We're going to have to boost water to this tank now and further up as we build further west. Mm-hmm. And so Jordan Valley is not going any more past U-111.
Okay. So there is no other option. This is it.
Yeah, and their capacity in those lines couldn't serve the fire flow and the peak demands that are needed.
I understand the reason. I just want to make sure there's no other technology or solutions out there that they
work mostly with the master plan.
Okay.
And this cost is not just the tanks. We have to run a transmission line quite a ways and put another meter station in. So,
yeah.
Okay. Well, the next couple of bigger ticket items will probably require council approving a printing press for me to print money.
Nice email.
Federal government's going to have to. So we did, in the past, we did talk about a out west public works annex building, as well as Fire Station 65. All the studies and everything the department heads are showing that need is coming. Public Works, you know, in the plan, it was supposed to be there now, but we have been pushing it. So as of now, funding-wise, obviously, we would need an incremental increase in new revenue to cover the debt service payment on this. And this projects are not cheap either. So we have a public works building, we have a fire station, public works annex building has, you know, different ownership different funds. So water fund will pay its share and storm drain and such and such. And then you have general fund portion, which is significant also. So we don't have cash to make this happen, and then there will be a time that we will have to issue bonds for it. And so right now, the plan is to have Public Works Building up and ready by fiscal year 2028, which is July of 2027. Right? So that would be then. As far as the fire station go, that's the tentative date for that. Opening date is July of 2028, which is fiscal year 2029. But then you work backwards, it's going to take about 2 years, or a year and a half to 2 years to build, to construct. And so if it's 2027, then, you know, next year, later next year, this time next year, we will be needing to address the funding for it.
Question? Are we able to set something up where, I mean, this is really funding the future growth, you know, out west, you know, all these things we're talking about. You know, do we have the ability to set something up like either a special service district, you know, or set up, you know, something similar to like a PID or something like that, you know, just on the government side where, you know, to fund these things, versus, as far as an alternative mechanism to pay for these things.
Well, we have the impact fees.
What's that?
Impact fees are one of those tools that we have. That's why when we do those studies, we recommend that you adopt what the study recommends and not some lower amount because it matches a neighboring city.
Yeah.
Because then we don't pass.
I think we always do. I think we always have
the development.
So Patrick, we did in looking at the Public Works Building, we looked at who should pay what. So that building's gonna mostly cover Daybreak, right?
Yeah.
It covers all of Daybreak.
The whole west side.
Yeah, if you look at Bangor 40th West, we actually did a proportionate study on Shoreline, on the annexed area, on Daybreak, and then South Jordan proper. And so we have those assigned out. And so we're going to be having conversations and working with those entities on them paying their share. But we need to get the funding up front so we can get the buildings going, same with Fire Station 65, and then basically work out how we're going to get reimbursed from some of these bigger developers. So that's in the works.
So are you saying we're going to bond and then those entities will pay the bond off?
They'll have their proportion.
Their proportion. So we have that study. We know what their amount is. There's details and negotiating that still need to take place, so that's not locked in, but it's our intent to work towards that.
But Patrick,
I'm talking about beyond impact fees.
Yeah. You're talking more like setting up a special service taxing district, aren't you?
Just a question. But
that's what you're throwing out, is that?
I mean, it's just like we're talking about, you know, funding something that's out there. We have a number of things all together, and can we just go put all this into special service district and lump it all together? Or something similar to a PID, you know, out there, would just, you know, that we.
So that the people being served by it are the ones paying for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that kind of what the purpose of a PID is anyway?
If you believe
the PID is a little different where, you know, you
something similar to it, yeah.
Yeah, and then a special service district. Yeah, I guess you can do that. And then you have to, I mean, I guess the goal would be to have a isolated group or section of the city pay for certain services. Well, you know, Public Works Building, I mean, or even fire station, you know, if these fire engines are out serving somewhere, those fire trucks will still come on this site to provide those services, right? So there will be some cross services.
And vice versa,
things like that. And so I think at the end of the day, how do you really split that geographical area to say, okay, this is serving you, and then create a special service district? Or service district, you're creating a service district, then you're basically levying additional taxes.
And right? I get there's some crossover. A fire truck might come over here and over there. There's some crossover, but there's some that's just not, that it's just going to be serving, you know, primarily you know, out in that area. And so, I mean, that just, I think it's something that we, I think we need to at least evaluate it. You know, I can tell you, the Jordan Basin, you know, when they were, they did an analysis, you know, as far as expanding out west, and they at least went through an analysis of it. And I think, I think we should at least do it.
Okay. We can take a look at that.
Well, I must be missing something, because if we do a bond and it's being paid through impact fees and the different entities, isn't that achieving the same thing?
Is that going to pay for all of it?
It's been paid for citywide, right? Well, the impact fee is isolated. Impact fee is calculated by that geographical area, and then they pay that. That's for sure. It's people moving in, they are paying for it.
Yeah.
But other sources will have to be shared. So I don't know. I haven't done an analysis, but at the end of the day, you know, like we were saying, service-wise going either way, I think funding-wise, you know, there's a lot of growth going to happen that way. So a lot of impact fee is going to go towards this. The difference between how much they pay or South Jordan proper pays may not be that big of a difference. I don't know. I haven't done the calculation yet. But it's something that we can definitely look at, yes.
Yeah. You know, ultimately, the Jordan Basin decided not to set up a separate, you know, separate it out, and they ran numbers, but you know, I at least want to know what it is, because we're talking. I mean, we're talking $30 million for a water tank. We're talking, you know, public works. So I mean, all these facilities.
Yeah,
we're talking some serious numbers here.
Yeah, it might get a little complicated. So, for example, the mayor and I, we both live on the area that will be serviced there in Tamara, but we've lived here 20+ years.
So,
so should
yeah, me too.
I guess a number of us here do. Yeah, and so we would have to work that out. Again, we have things in the works as far as the big developments on the west side and what we can work out with them to help pay for this. But if we want to get things online so that we don't interrupt service raffles, service levels, Sunil's going to have to go out and get a bond so that we can plan on this.
And Jason, one thing you could do is you could just go in there and you could appropriate it. So let's say the total amount. Whatever that number is, you could say 50%, 75% it goes over here, but some of it's going to serve the rest of the city. So, you know, so you
use the study that we've done.
So we understand there's going to be crossover. So you factor in the crossover and what that is. So everyone pays their, you know, make it proportional. Everyone pays their fair share for this, for what's going to get out of it. But the new, you know, the new development, you know, you get them, you know, as they're, you know, build more property out there, they pay for more of that share. But any crossover, we make it proportional.
And you would remember the, you know, when council accepted the annexed area.
Yeah.
You know, council proposed that we charge a little higher water rate for the annexed area.
Yeah.
For those, so those are in place already.
Yeah.
Well, would be when the
and maybe that just, you know, helps with some of it, and it just makes it more equitable.
I agree with that. So for me and Don and Jason, it is going to be wonky because we have all lived there for at least 20 years and we're not actually in any of those new developing neighborhoods. You know what I mean?
Well, neither am I. I live in a developing neighborhood that's done developing.
No.
But it's still part of my city.
And you've been there 20 years, yeah.
Just like you.
Mm-hmm.
I moved in the same time you did.
Yeah.
So I hear what you're saying, Patrick, but also it's, you know, the amenity of the Beast Stadium, the amenity of, you know, all the things that are there as a result of Daybreak. We need to keep that into consideration too. Like, are they paying into the tax base? Absolutely they will be. So do we penalize everybody on the west side? We need to balance this out carefully because there's affordable housing issues.
I'm not talking about, I don't like the word penalty. I'm not talking about penalizing anyone. I'm just talking about people paid the for where the services are at. They pay for the share of where it's going. But I,
yeah.
It's akin to the discussion of the school district split from a decade ago.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's that
but
same.
We're pulling out now because it's not to our benefit. Now we all are in this together. So
well,
I disagree with what you're saying.
Before you move on, what's our estimated costs on the public works?
Not the latest figure?
Yeah.
Hold on, I'm taking my heart medicine today.
The latest number on that is about 40.
Okay, and fire station nowadays?
About 21.
We are running short on time. I had a couple other very key items. Mayor, may I suggest that we amend the agenda to remove the closed session and then add that to the end of your regular meeting? And then there's one other quick item, because depending on what you tell me, may also force another amendment to your agenda. Under the items for strategic planning that I wanted to discuss with you, one, I'll just put a placeholder because we'll circle back to it. I want to make 2025 a focus on economic development. It's a conversation I've had with many of you, and I want to spend a great deal of time working in that arena in the 2025 year. So we'll circle back to that, and we'll see a lot on that. The other one that I wanted to bring to your attention is, I've been looking strategically ahead, is how the city deals with flag lots. Recently, you've had some of those come before you. We are receiving several more applications. These are going to take a significant amount of your time. There's a lot of unanswered questions surrounding flag lots and how we deal with those as a city. And what I would recommend to give us some time to figure that out is that you guys consider passing a resolution for a notice of pending ordinance that we're going to revisit and make some changes to the flag lot ordinance. I do have a draft of that prepared tonight, and if you're interested in doing that to kind of call a timeout so that we can fix some things that we know are issues and problems within the ordinance, to give you some time to vet that, I would suggest passing that notice of pending ordinance in your meeting tonight so that we can work on that. All of those applications
doesn't require a public hearing.
No, all the applications that we have received would be vested under the current rules, and we would have to process those. But this would put a stay to any new ones coming until we can fix some of the issues with the.
How long is the stay? Like,
it's 6 months or until you, that's the max, or you get this fixed, and we would be bringing you some things in the early part of 2025 so that you can address the issues that have been raised and the concerns that exist with.
And that you obviously have some ideas of how we fix this.
Yes.
Okay.
So remember, this goes back to a change we made to kind of solve one issue, and it has now spawned many new concerns and issues that probably should be discussed and remedied if that's really what you want it to have happen or not. Then just to wrap up quickly, if you're okay with that, Mayor, I would suggest that when they amend the agenda to add that closed session at the end, that we also add that. Just to give you the upcoming budget schedule, we have a budget meeting planned, and these should already be on your calendars from Melanie. A January 29th budget session, a February 26th, and if needed, March 26th. Those would be the
say those again, please.
January 29th, February 26th, and if needed, March 26th. Those will be the heavy lift meetings where we bring back and talk about the staffing requests, the capital improvement plan, those kinds of things. And then we'll follow up on some of the stuff that you've given us tonight to start working on. We'll bring that back.
And then do we need to amend this agenda or just do a recess?
Yes, you should do it.
Or just recess
and
come back to
this. We should do an amendment to this agenda to remove that item, and then you'll have to, when you open the next meeting, move to add it to that meeting.
So not come back to this meeting, but then add it.
Well,
to
I guess we,
sometimes
I guess,
just recess
I guess we could
meeting.
Recess
yeah,
this meeting and then just reconvene at the end. That might be
I think
easier.
That's a little cleaner.
Okay.
Let's do that. Good idea.
Okay.
Thank you,
you,
Mayor.
All right, I'm going to ask if there is a motion to recess our Recon strategic planning study meeting and come back for item F after we adjourn our regular council meeting.
So moved.
Second.
For what it's worth, I recall that's how this meeting was.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. We will recess this meeting until the conclusion of our following meeting, and then we will come back in and have our executive closed session. Discussion regarding deployment of security personnel, devices, or systems. And I don't need a motion to adjourn because we're just recessing this meeting. All right, we'll see you in there. Continuation of our city council study meeting that was recessed because we have one more item on the agenda. I'm going to ask if there's a motion to recess our city council study meeting and move us into executive closed session for the discussion of deployment of security personnel, devices, or systems.
So moved.
Thank you. We have a motion by Mrs. Zander. Is there a second?
Second.
Oh. Thank you. Second by Mrs. Johnson.
Just quick.
Any discussion? All right. We're going to ask Mrs. Crookston to please lead us in a roll call vote on this decision.
Councilmember Zander.
Yes.
Councilmember Johnson.
Yes.
Councilmember Harris.
Yes.
Councilmember Shelton.
Yes.
Councilmember McGuire.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. All right. I can just ask this, right? This is by acclamation. Okay, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you all.